This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
So Mention Mania is headed to Charlotte this weekend. And there is one major thread that connects me and Gardner Minshew II. We both own degrees in communication from East Carolina University. Yes, I covered both of his seasons at ECU. I talked to him pretty regularly, probably once a week during that time. So since everybody is so interested in the mythology of this guy, I'll get to a few Minshew experiences I've had in a bit. As for this weekend being billed a homecoming of sorts for Gardner, I strongly doubt he looks fondly on his North Carolina playing days. For starters, his teams went 3-9. Hard to have much fun when combined in 2 years, you go 6-18. But more so, he was playing under Scotty Montgomery at the time, who's since been replaced by Mike Houston. He was mishandled by the coaching staff when you look back on it. It was Gardner's second year. He's in line to start. And Scotty brings in a player that he coached at Duke, Thomas Cirque, who you might remember when Duke had a great year in 2014. It was the multi-quarterback offense they ran. Anthony Boone was more of the thrower. Thomas Cirque was great in the red zone. Big build, could run the ball. So they brought Cirque in. And college football fans, it is a pet peeve I have with some of you that you get really excited about the graduate transfer when most times are not. Even if they're coming from a great program, there's a reason why they're leaving that great program, and it's likely because they didn't cut it there. 95% of the time, that's the case where the graduate transfers don't work out. But Pirate fans, at that time, I remember, were very excited about Cirque. They were down on Minshew. Understandably so. You won 3 games the year before. Maybe just a little bit of something new will work here. So going into camp, everybody thought that Minshew was going to get beat out. Scotty, it was clear, wanted Cirque to play. That's why you bring in the grad transfer who you had success with in the ACC. But Gardner wasn't having it. He was better than Cirque in preseason camp. The team really rallied around Gardner. All the stuff we've heard about him and the way players swear by him, think he's a great teammate, that's all true. And ECU's players, they really got around, rallied around Gardner Minshew. And that's why, probably much to the chagrin of the coaching staff, he started game one against James Madison. He couldn't justify playing Cirque when Minshew was better in camp and the team preferred Gardner. But then they struggle a little bit in the first half of the first game. So he gets benched at halftime in game one. And I had sources back then linked with Minshew's family that told me he was not pleased about that. Gardner wasn't, and the family was ticked off. They thought that Gardner was being mishandled. And I completely understand that. So when Cirque starts playing games from that point on, less people start talking to Gardner Minshew. And then when Cirque gets hurt, here comes Gardner. We want to talk to him as the starting quarterback. He said, nah. You didn't want to talk to me last week. I'm not going to talk to you guys right now. He was always a straightforward, free-spirited guy. Now, I didn't see the personality of somebody who had Crown Royal in his waistband and was stretching practically naked with aviators on. We didn't see that guy, which might be a product of the culture that existed that was fostered by Scotty Montgomery. It was more regiment, military-based, the way that Scotty led that ship, which I imagine is a lot different than the way Mike Leach coaches things at Washington State. I bet that had a lot to do with it. But as cliche as it sounds, Gardner's love of football fueled his journey, which is a pretty impressive journey. He signed to play at Troy out of high school. That didn't work out, so he went JUCO. He's playing in Mississippi. First time I heard about him. Hey, this quarterback East Carolina's getting, he was in Last Chance U. Oh, did he play for that crazy coach in Mississippi? No. He was the quarterback on the rival team. Oh, so now I'm just pausing to see. Oh, yeah, that guy. Okay, that guy. is going to be playing quarterback for the Pirates. 2 years for 3-9 ECU, benched. You have coaches you feel like let you down. But you keep pushing on. You're pursuing coaching by looking at Alabama. You thought you were going to go there and start your coaching career learning under Nick Saban, because even Gardner Minshew isn't crazy enough to think he's playing over Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts last year. Tragedy strikes in Pullman. A quarterback commits suicide. Mike Leach liked something in Gardner Minshew, wants to bring him in, and as the story goes, asks him, hey, do you want to lead the nation in passing? Yeah. Gardner comes in, and that's exactly what he does. Picked in the fifth round. First game. First drive. Starting quarterback Nick Foles goes down with an injury. The legend begins, and now it's all Minshew mania as the Panthers get set to host Minshew and the Jaguars this weekend. He was always opportunistic. I remember his very first snap at East Carolina. It was 2016. It was the year before UCF went unbeaten. They were coming off a winless year. So Scott Frost is in here, and it's in Greenville. The starting quarterback gets knocked out of the game because of a targeting call. So he's down on the field, and you see number 5, Minshew, just warming up. ECU had another guy who could have played quarterback, who rolled up Virginia Tech the previous year, but he had been moved to running back. James Summers, who was once a signee with North Carolina and NC State. Don't know why I'm giving you that much background detail, but James Summers, just know, could have played quarterback. They decided to play Minshew. He comes into the game. His first career pass, 75-yard touchdown. But he wasn't the starter. There were seniors in front of him. So he played a half. And back then, 3 years ago, this rule didn't exist where you could play in 4 games and still retain your redshirt season. So Gardner was concerned he was losing a full year of football because he played one half against UCF. So what's he try to do? He tries to get a medical redshirt. How does he try to do that? Well, let's hear from Gardner himself.
I mean, that was really the only way for me to get a redshirt, you know, at the time, just to get a medical. So I had the bright idea to try to break my hand, but it didn't work. You know, I guess fortunately, I mean, looking back, it was pretty dumb. Believe it or not, that breaking your hand is pretty dumb. But yeah, that was, you know, but that's just, I always tell people, you know, what would you do to play more ball? And that's damn near anything.
He didn't specify how he tried to break his hand with a hammer after that game in 2016. But he grabbed a bottle of Jack Daniels, he grabbed a hammer, and he's sitting there, and he told his Washington State teammates this. He says the only people that know he knew he tried to do this until now. He took a swig of Jack Daniels, and then bang, 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 hit himself in the hand 3 times with a hammer. He didn't break his hand. Questionable arm strength, right? Then he does it again. Still doesn't break his hand. He's in pain, but the pain threshold that these football players have, it's pretty intense. It's a lot more than ours. He did it a 3rd time. Bang, bang, bang. Didn't break his hand, so he just gave up, and he didn't get the medical redshirt.
Sounds like he wasn't drunk enough. Because if you're not drunk enough and you're trying to break your own hand, I would think there's a part of you that's not going to swing as hard as you could possibly swing.
It's kind of a heady play, though. He would have got the medical redshirt. How are you going to prove? How's the NCAA going to figure out you hit yourself with a hammer versus, oh, I threw one time and I accidentally hit the back of a helmet in practice?
I mean, if your hand looks like a deflated tire when you're talking to him about it, then there might be some suspicion. But I don't know why he would think that this would be something that he could
do. Thank God that they changed the rules. If they didn't and the story got out, there's going to be more players out there hitting themselves with hammers to try and get medical redshirts. It does have me thinking, this is the one instance where we heard the story. Has this ever happened before? Oh, when did he get hurt in that game? I don't remember when that happened. Did it happen at practice? There have to be stories out there where guys, to get another year and get the medical redshirt, maybe not with a hammer, did something else to injure themselves intentionally.
Well, hopefully not, considering this didn't work. So I hope there's not other people
trying to do it. So
there
are probably players who had other methods that were more effective.
What would be a better way to pull this off?
think on that, and we'll go back to you in a second. The two key ingredients to Minshew Mania, I think, are this. Relatability and the underdog story. This is what I want to ask Jim Zocchi when he joins us in a few minutes from the Panthers Radio Network. What makes Kyle Allen's story different than Gardner Minshew's? Kyle Allen comes in unheralded, 4-touchdown game, back-to-back road wins. I don't see Kyle Allen fever, but I do see Minshew Mania. And I think the reasons are this. Relatability, underdog story. The relatability, we all know a guy who has that body type. And somebody who might have a sweet stash, somebody who likes to party with Crown Royal in his waistband. It's part of the reason why I think Steph Curry is so likable. We know guys who look that way, and maybe we think internally that if we got a chance, maybe we can rain threes because we look like Steph. I also think his story is what puts him over the top. It's the love of football. It's the underdog deal. Kyle Allen, he was the number one player in 2014 coming into college football. Played at Texas A&M. Like, he was above Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Now, he didn't end up being that, and he was an undrafted player, but it's just a different story. And I think Gardner Minshew, he looks less the part than Allen does. He's shorter than Allen. Allen, he's the prototypical quarterback build, good-looking guy, big arm, Arizona quarterback of the year. I think that stuff factors in. Before we get to Jim Zocchi, have you guys thought of a better way you can injure yourself to get a medical red shirt?
Could fall down a set of stadium stairs.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's actually not that bad.
Right.
I was working out. I was training hard.
Oh, man.
Why y'all bruised up on both sides?
Fall down the stairs. Make sure you fall on the right side, though. So if you're a quarterback, it's your non-throwing shoulder that you fall on that side. Everybody knows that. Jim Zocchi will tell us some Steve Smith and Jake DeLome stories next.
Come here to talk sports.
It is man at his most man.
And do it like you mean it.
What you got, biatch?
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
I was watching that NL wildcard game last night and thought, as the Nats were winning at the end, that's a game I'm used to seeing Washington, D.C. teams lose. Whether it's the Redskins, the Caps until 2018, the Nats. I'm used to seeing them lose in heartbreaking fashion. It was kind of new to see them win. I used to consider Washington, D.C. and Cleveland, Ohio as Sports Hell USA, but they both have titles in the last 5 years. So we have a poll out at Sports Hub Triad. Where is Sports Hell USA? I think Minnesota, Phoenix, and Atlanta probably the three best options when you consider how long it's been for all three of those places since they've won a major sports title. I do have some people saying that, oh, Atlanta won an MLS championship recently. Some are even saying Charlotte. And we're getting other options, which we'll get to maybe a little bit. We're now being joined by Jim Zocchi, who's been a Panthers radio commentator with the Panthers Radio Network since the inception of Panthers football, the inaugural year in 1995. The team's going to be inducting 4 new members into the Hall of Honor this weekend. Jake DeLome, Jordan Gross, Wesley Walls, and Steve Smith. You've been lucky enough, Jim, to work with 2 of those guys in the booth this year alongside Mick Mixon. So what's it like not only to work in the booth with 2 soon-to-be Hall of Fame inductees in DeLome and Gross, but also 2 people that you covered their entire careers for?
Well, first of all, you wouldn't know that they were about to be inducted into a Hall of Honor because they're so humble. And I talked to Jake today earlier about it. They're coming in, of course, this weekend. There's going to be a dinner and the event itself during the game on Sunday. And what they were as players, what they are as announcers, what they are being inducted into the Hall is they were great players and great human beings. And so we're really fortunate to have them both.
What's your favorite memory of Steve Smith? Is there a good story you can bring to us that maybe we didn't see on a Sunday at 1, 4, or 8 o'clock?
You know, the thing about Smith that just defines his career is he had so many great athletic plays. Was just his physicality. I mean, just he would just line up opposite a cornerback and the play might go to the other side of the field, and it might be a running play. And he would just get about into a street brawl with them out there. And he would just set that tone early in the game with whoever was covering him and get inside their head. And whether that would be they can't cover him as a pass receiver, can't deal with him as a blocker. I mean, you talk about a guy who just wanted it more than anybody else. He was just so tenacious. And then off the field was just sometimes very engaging to talk to, sometimes a little bit moody at times, but just a fun character to me, easily the best Panther in the history of the franchise. And I would think any of those guys being inducted would say the same thing about Smitty.
What do you remember about the early days of Jake Delhomme, your early interactions? When did you know he was pretty good?
You know, it's funny, I just talked about this at the game last week in Houston, was I said, when did you know, because he came in his first game of his first year, halftime of the game against Jacksonville, ironically. We're playing Jacksonville this week coming up. I said, when did you know that Rodney Pete was going to be benched and you were going to see some playing time? Like, I thought maybe Coach Fox had prepared him, like, be ready. We may make a sudden change, like, heading into the opener, which is what that game was. And he said, as we were walking into the locker room at halftime. So he had 12 minutes to get to realize that he was going to be the Panthers' starting quarterback. He leads 3 touchdown drives in the second half. And, of course, a 4th down conversion to Ricky Prohl, very famous in your area up there, for the touchdown to beat Jacksonville in the opener. And, you know, Jake had some rough moments. I mean, he had some off-and-on games that weren't great, but we had a great defense, so they won as a team. But, you know, Jake had a great record, wins and losses in his career. Wasn't always the reason they won, but he was just exactly what you needed, a leader at that position. And, again, that tenacity of never wanting to lose, where he would just somehow, in most cases, make those plays that needed to happen to try to win a game.
It's Jim Zocchi from the Panthers Radio Network on Twitter, at Jim Zocchi. I don't want to be the radio show that just reminisces on the old days, because we got football to talk about this weekend, Jags-Panthers. And it is a homecoming of sorts for Gardner Minshew, even though Gardner's best days in college were in Pullman with Washington State last year. He was on an East Carolina football team that went 3-9 back-to-back seasons. What's your favorite part of this Minshew story?
You know, it's just, it's very similar. I was talking to Marty Herney about this after practice today, of kind of what the Panthers are finding in Kyle Allen. So I like the matchup. Both teams started 0-2. Both had a turn to unproven young quarterback. Both are not only winning, but there's an energy and excitement that's building with us. Now, Minshew's got more of a label. It's a Minshew mania, the mustache, and there's kind of this celebrity that's coming with it, where Kyle Allen is more just kind of doing a job and showing up without much fanfare with it. But there is a similarity of what they both bring in. He, you know, Minshew moves really well in the pocket. If you went back and saw some of the highlights from last week on those touchdown throws, I mean, he can run. He's their second leading rusher. Obviously, a big gap between Leonard Fournette and him, but he's their second leading rusher, really athletic. And, you know, Marty was laughing as we talked about it. He's a 6th-round pick, and he's just out there playing. And Coach Marone on the conference call today saying, you know, he doesn't say much to him. He's kind of joking, but he says, I'm his coach. He barely says anything to me. So he doesn't really have a feel personally of what he's like very much. So I think it's going to be a fun matchup to see how these teams do.
Yeah, why isn't there a Kyle Allen mania versus a Minshew mania type thing that we've seen the last couple of weeks? What do you think separates the two?
Yeah, I think we probably have had so much spotlight on the quarterback for the last 9 years that this is more the guy showing up who's doing the job, and it's kind of been like a week-to-week proposition with Kyle Allen, like, you know, let's see what he can do this week. Let's see what he can do with a third consecutive start. It's kind of like we're all finding out together. So, I mean, he really obviously overachieved and impressed with his 4 touchdown passes in Arizona. Last week, statistically, probably is more what we thought the Arizona game would be like, but it happened against Houston. But, you know, when you're winning, you know, they're 3-0 going back to last year when he's a starter. You don't mess with that. You know, you got a winning streak going on, so you just kind of want to keep it going for as long as you can.
KK Short on injured reserve with the partially torn rotator cuff. Now the Panthers need to find a way to replace him or to try and do it by committee if it's not just one guy. Whose role changes more, you think, moving forward? Gerald McCoy's or Vernon Butler's?
You know, the good thing is, I think, It's hard to lose a Pro Bowl guy and say you've got depth, but they do. So we saw Vernon Butler step up and make that quarterback sack, strip sack in that game last week. You know, Gerald McCoy is going to be on the field probably the same amount as they always would use him, and they'll line him up as a end and a defensive tackle. But, you know, Vernon Butler plays a little bit more inside, so I would think Vernon Butler probably, in terms of snap count, is probably the guy that will see more playing time coming out of this than anybody else. So you would keep McCoy basically on the same amount of snaps that he had before, but there's so many guys that can step up. They activated Brian Cox Jr. We'll see if he's active on Sunday as far as getting it down from 53 to 46, but you've seen it. I mean, you've got Marquise Haynes and Brian Burns and Mario Addison. You can get more out of FAO Bot if you needed to. So there's a lot of different guys that can easily absorb some of those snaps that he was holding.
The city of Minnesota's last major sports championship was 1991 with the Twins. The city of Phoenix, they haven't won since the Arizona Diamondbacks did in 2001. The Atlanta last championship for that city was the Braves in 1995 among the major sports. When you think about what fan base has gone through the worst, what sports city, where do you go?
You know where I'm from, right?
I don't. Jim, where are you from?
Cleveland. I am from Cleveland.
Yeah, but so yeah, Cleveland had LeBron, though, right? I mean, that's good.
And he's left twice. He's gone right now. So if you're talking, you know, a body of work, Cleveland's right up there. Yeah, they won a championship in the last, what, 5 years or whatever with the Cavaliers. But and they've had some heart when they do get there. It's heartbreaking, like the Cubs World Series with the Indians a few years ago. But when was the last time, I know they don't have as many teams to pick from, when was the last time Buffalo won anything? Sabres won anything?
No, Sabres have never won.
Bills haven't.
Bills haven't. No, no.
Bills have now, we know that, with the four Super Bowl appearances they had. But, you know, Buffalo, again, they don't have Major League Baseball. They lost their NBA team decades ago. So, yeah, it's probably not quite as fair of a comparison for Buffalo. But growing up in Cleveland, I mean, that's been, that was a tough go. And that's why that championship with LeBron was so special. Cause I want to say it was 52 years between city championships, between the Browns championship and then LeBron's championship, which I called that LeBron's championship. He really didn't have a lot of help.
Jim,
Kyrie helped at that time. I shouldn't say that. Kyrie helped.
Are you in Bank of America Stadium right now? Because I'm seeing the U.S. women's national team making their way in there.
No, I just left, honestly, after practice about 2 hours ago, and I've been following on Twitter. Yeah, they're practicing in there, at least they were, and meeting with the fans a little bit. And then they've got the match tomorrow night there. So I know a lot of people are excited. There's a lot of soccer fans here who are excited to see that and hoping for MLS and even more soccer in the future. And things are certainly trending that way in Charlotte.
Jim, it's good to hear your voice. I'll see you on Sunday.
All right, Josh. Thank you.
You got it. It's Jim Zoki from the Carolina Panthers Radio Network. Yeah, soccer town, Charlotte, North Carolina. Got the match tomorrow night. It is the victory lap, the victory tour after the Women's World Cup title, their second consecutive Women's World Cup championship. While that's happening, I'm seeing the practicing at Bank of America Stadium, wishing I was there, trying to talk to Megan Rapinoe and friends. I see at North Carolina Media Day, it's a long-standing tradition that freshman players do not talk to the media until they played their first game. Well, that long-standing tradition's over. Cole Anthony meeting with reporters, and there's this massive crowd at the Smith Center. And as this massive crowd surrounds this teenager and other North Carolina players on one side of the floor, you can see in some of the camera angles, there is this figure shooting hoops on the other side. And you might think, what media member is shooting hoops while we're getting sound and interviewing people at Media Day? Turns out it wasn't a media figure. It was rapper J. Cole getting shots up at North Carolina Media Day. So that's what we're missing out on, just hanging out here in Kernersville with you guys.
Cole's got a shot, man. He's
he proved it.
He played in high school. He's actually pretty good.
He proved it at the All-Star Celebrity Game 4 or 5 years ago. He was one of the best celebrity game players, especially in hip-hop, who did a nice job in that regard. Yes, Aaron.
I dunk on J. Cole.
No, you wouldn't.
I dunk on
you
J.
Don't,
Cole.
Can you dunk?
I could dunk.
You better be able to dunk. How tall are you? Like 6'4"?
6'4", 6'5".
You better be able to, man.
I didn't know you could dunk.
I jam on J. Cole.
All right. Well,
J. Cole out here making the rounds because he just took a picture with the Charlotte Hornets that was on Twitter here.
Getting shots up still in the Smith Center. He hasn't left the Smith Center in the last 24 hours.
He's just been spend the night.
Just getting shots up.
Where my shorts at?
That's right. A lot of people saying Charlotte potentially being Sports Hell USA. Just stop.
See? Told you.
Well, no, I mean, just because other people are being dumb doesn't mean that right.
No. Because you do that all the time. You base opinion off of what you think the majority thinks, right?
I know that North Carolina is a college sports state. You know, and the Tar Heels and Duke are so good that we're spoiled. We're spoiled. And the Hurricanes won a championship too, and that's 2.5 hours down the road.
But that's not the question. Charlotte's not in Raleigh, and Charlotte's none of those college teams. It's just about Charlotte and their pro franchise.
I know, but there's only two. Like, Minnesota's got three.
They're so bad they can't attract the Major League Baseball team.
Well, no, people just don't care enough about Major League Baseball.
Everyone
if they did, it. People would. Tampa. Well, they won a Super Bowl in 2002. Mm-hmm. Can't really fly with that, Justin. Atlanta won an MLS Cup. All right, yeah. Atlanta, yay. Soccer state.
But then they left, didn't they? Oh, no, that was the hockey team.
Desmond, I got this. Marshall tweets in, the state of Tennessee is sports hell. Titans, Grizzlies, Predators never won anything.
It's not a bad submission.
Not to mention Tennessee football. Well, the Titans have been around for about a little over 20 years. The Grizzlies, how long have the Grizzlies been a thing?
I mean, they started in Vancouver, so...
Right,
they,
so...
I'm trying to think of when they moved over. They've been
and
there for
the
about
Predators, it's been about 15 years or so.
And they're in plant, too.
So, I can't really say you're sports hell USA when all three of those teams have only been in their current iteration for a little over 20 years. Can't quite do that. It's almost the thing with Charlotte. They don't have three teams. You got two, and they've been here for 30 years combined. I mean, that's it. Or, I mean, 30 years, they've both been in place. Panthers for 25. So we're looking at the poll. Minnesota, Phoenix, Atlanta. 43% of the vote right now says Phoenix is the option. 336-777-1600 if you want it on today's show on Twitter, at SportsHub Triad, talking about sports hell USA.
I don't even think of Phoenix as a sports town, do you? I mean, is it one of the sports towns that come to mind?
It's just on the West Coast. I mean, yeah, when the teams are good, the fans really care. But the problem is none of the teams have been good. Like, there was a really ravenous fan base when Steve Nash was winning back-to-back MVP awards. And when they made it to the Super Bowl, those fans traveled. And those fans traveled to Charlotte, by the way, when they played in the NFC title game.
Yeah, they did.
A few years ago. So they traveled well. I mean, yeah, it's a good sports city. It's a good sports state. State of Arizona. Tomorrow, we're going to play the movie game. Tomorrow, we're going to chat with Andrea Adelson of ESPN. Also, we're going to be sharing with Darren Vaught. So tomorrow, a pretty big show that we got lined up. But we're not done with today.
The champ is here!
This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
The only thing in sports I care about less than fantasy sports is media coverage of high school recruiting. And there are two big headlines today that are making me quite uncomfortable. Starting with the Indianapolis Stars story, profiling not the son of Peyton Manning or Eli Manning, but of the eldest Manning brother, Cooper Manning. Can you think of a better name for a quarterback than the one I'm about to bring to you? Arch Manning. Like, if you're a quarterback, nepotism is something that is prevalent at all levels of life in the business universe and certainly in sports. If you have the last name Manning and you play quarterback, that helps you. I think it gives you an extra leg up if your first name is literally Arch. And apparently, he is a freshman quarterback and he's very good. And you have Archie Manning, the father of the Manning brothers, the great New Orleans Saint and Ole Miss quarterback. He said on the record that, quote, he's probably a little ahead of his sons where they were as freshmen, saying that he's looked very good. And you look at the tape, he's not playing JV. He's made the varsity club and he's just slinging it. And the tape looks pretty good, I think. So there's that. And then with North Carolina last night, 5-star guard Caleb Love says that he's going to play for Roy Williams and the Tar Heels, making that three top 25 players that's going to be in the 2020 class three five-star players. It's the first time Roy's had three top 25 players since 2014. But I'm just very uncomfortable getting into what these players are and what they potentially can be when they are still in high school. High school recruiting, it's such a crapshoot, both in football and in basketball. It matters. Don't get me wrong. That's the life source of all football and basketball programs, how you're recruiting. So I'm not dismissing the importance of recruiting, but the media coverage of it is a bit of a sham. I'm going to let you behind the curtain a little bit because I used to actually work and run a scout site. I had these air quote insiders who were telling me all about how good these high school kids are, but really the star system is the media evaluating how good a certain player is, a certain prospect is. And I've seen it flip in ways that seem a little strange. Like, there's a three-star kid, and this has happened a handful of times, more than I can count on my hand. A three-star kid commits to Clemson, and all of a sudden, overnight, he's a four-star kid now. Or, other way around, three-star kid who's getting consideration from SEC schools commits to Appalachian State, all of a sudden becomes a two-star player. Huh. I don't really trust the media's evaluation of how good high school players are, but considering how much we love college football and around here college basketball, we're going to consume the content. We're going to read what Caleb Love has to say. We're going to read what the media deems to be five-star players, even if it isn't the most accurate stuff. And I always fear, while there are many instances where they're right, especially with the top guys like Zion and RJ Barrett, these players who were great, there are also instances like Cam Reddish last year. There's instances, multi-year situations like Seventh Woods, where we build these guys up and we put the expectations on them. Why? Because the media said that this guy was going to be very good and gave him a bunch of stars. I'm uncomfortable doing that when it comes to high school players. I refuse to criticize high schoolers for athletic performance. I don't think that's what the high school game should be about. But let me clarify something here. I'm not saying the media shouldn't cover high school sports. Not saying that. We do an excellent job here on Sports Hub Triad. Dave Pulaski, Joe Serrera, Desmond Johnson, and Rod Funderburk covering high school sports. And I can tell you, playing high school sports, there was no bigger thrill I had than hearing my name on the radio. No bigger deal than reading my name in newsprint. I don't want to take that away from high schoolers. But the critical aspect of it, like, I couldn't be fair to myself saying, okay, we could talk about high schoolers, but you can only say good things about them. If you can't say bad things, if you're not comfortable saying negative things about somebody, then you probably shouldn't be covering it at all on a format such as this one. The other clarification I need to make here, I love high school sports. I took a job in Colorado where 95% of my job was broadcasting high school. And it wasn't just football and it wasn't just basketball. It was high school wrestling. It was volleyball. It was baseball. It was softball. I broadcasted it all and I loved it. It was one of the most fun years I ever had in all of radio, my radio career. So I love high school sports. I'm not saying the media shouldn't cover high school sports. I just disdain high school recruiting coverage because I'm here to tell you, I'm going to break some news for you right now. The media doesn't know. We don't know. We don't evaluate players at the high school level as well as Saban and Dabo and Roy Williams and Coach K do. We don't. And often we're trying to play catch up. When they offer one of these kids, someone who might not be a star at all of a sudden becomes a 3 and a 4 because guess what? We're not following it as closely as they need to. And we could just play catch up and we know people will click on it and people will consume it, but it's uncomfortable, whether it's Caleb Love or Arch Manning. Sarah Sivian, Carolina Hurricanes beat reporter, will join us in 10 minutes. 336-777-1600, the phone number if you want in on the show. You could tweet us at SportsHubTriad. Yes, Dad.
Excuse me.
Are you good?
Yeah, I'm okay.
First time the microphone goes on. Got a cough.
I hear what you're saying. I agree with a lot of the points you're saying. The Seventh Woods thing, I don't think you should throw him in there because he got injured. That's different than him just not panning out to...
When he became healthy again, this wasn't debilitating stuff for him. He was a teenager.
It was a leg injury sophomore year that was pretty debilitating. It robbed him of his explosiveness. That's why he was rated so high to begin with. And then he was already signed to Carolina early. I think he signed after sophomore year of high school. So he was already in there. So
I'm bringing up the point. No, I don't think it is. I think it does apply because we place these expectations on him. And without the injury stuff there, we'd hold him to a standard. And he didn't even meet it before he got injured. And when he did get injured, people don't care about that as much. They still had the expectation for him. I remember the UNCW game. He had 11 points in the first half. People would say, okay, now we could start relying on this guy again, when really he hadn't cut his teeth at the collegiate level at any point yet. But putting Seventh Woods aside, the point remains, I refuse to criticize high schoolers on this platform. It took me a while to get adjusted to college athletes. I remember one time, I ripped into a freshman player. I won't say the coach. I won't say the program. I ripped into a freshman player for a football team. And then the coach called me into his office. I talked to him about it. And he said, man, the guy just flunked a class yesterday. He was he was sick as well. That's why he was out there and he struggled. And you're just going to come out here and crush a 17-year-old? What are you doing here? But then I start covering Duke basketball and North Carolina, and you see Kobe White have the efforts that he puts in, Zion Williamson, and you start thinking, okay, if you're playing at that stage, the very top tier of a college sport, then yeah, you're asking for some of that a little bit if you're trying to reach the heights of being an NBA lottery pick and being a national contender in a collegiate sport.
You know, thinking on it now, with high school football play-by-play that I've been doing here for a number of years now and then contributing with High School Huddle and other stuff, I'm around these high school kids and coaches and staff a lot. And typically, for the most part, we don't really go negative in terms of, like, during a game. It's very easy to go down that wormhole, I will say that.
It's not an opinionated format.
Right.
You're just covering the game. Something's good, something's bad, objectively, that happens. I'm speaking about columnists. I'm speaking about shows such as this one.
High School Huddle falls in that, where we're basically giving our opinions on the teams that we saw over the course of the week, whether they're good or bad and why. So that would fall into that category. And we don't go negative with players. Probably, it's never been spoken, but probably for the same reason that you've laid out, that, you know, going in on a 15-year-old freshman quarterback over in Wilkes County, that's not really, you know, helpful to the kid. It's not helpful to the broadcaster or the publisher or whoever, the writer. And it just seems mean. You know what I mean?
That's why I don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
I don't want to touch it. If I put it this way, if I can't say negative things about you in this platform, I'm not going to talk about you at all. Because if you are somebody, I want to have flexibility with the topic to go either positive or negative with the subject matter. We have that with professional sports. We have that with collegiate sports. We don't have it with high school, and that's what's uncomfortable and unsettling a little bit when it comes to it. Don't forget that the Dixie Classic Fair is coming up October 4th through the 13th. Learn more about them, dcfair.com. Also use the hashtag #HowDoYouFare. Advance tickets still are on sale right now. And if you order an advance ticket, again, the fair starting just in a couple of days, 40% off. And something you got to think about ahead of the DC Fair. I'm excited about the food. I'm excited about the rides. Hashtag #HowDoYouFare, dcfair.com. You can learn more about them. Okay, one of my favorite people in all of sports media is Sarah Sivian. One of the funniest people on Twitter, at Sarah Sivian. The Carolina Hurricanes, they start their season tomorrow. Hockey begins tonight with the defending champion St. Louis Blues hosting last year's champ, the Washington Capitals. It's crazy that we're talking about hockey at this point, but what I love about Sarah, it often branches way outside of that. She is one of the funniest people I know in all of sports media. She's going to join the show next on The Drive.
A much, 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 much better show, better show. The Drive with Josh Graham.
It's Crazy to think hockey season starts tomorrow. For the Carolina Hurricanes, that is. PNC Arena, it's the Hurricanes hosting the Montreal Canadiens, the Capitals, last year's champ, or make it 2 years ago's champ, plays the defending Stanley Cup champion, St. Louis Blues, tonight. We're now being joined, though, by one of my favorite people in the sports media. It is Sarah Sivian, who's on Twitter, at Sarah Sivian, Reader Stuff, The Athletic, Carolina's Hurricanes beat reporter. Sarah, I've got a bunch of tweets that people handed me here, and I've got a ton of hockey questions as well. I'm just glad we're doing this again. How you doing?
I know. I'm so happy to be back, happy to have relevant things to talk about, and scared to see my tweets. What's up?
So this is what we do. We will do a tweet from Sarah Sivian, at Sarah Sivian, then we'll get to a Carolina Hurricanes hockey question. Let's start here. Taylor Swift sings about drinking like she's drank a Smirnoff Ice for the first time.
She does. Listen, I love her. She's my close personal friend. I have a picture with her, but not actually, but yes. But every time, it's like she just discovered drinking. In her songs now, it's like, I'm drunk in the back of the car and I'm crying. I'm like, God, what did you think was going to happen, honey? You're obviously upset. Geez, act like you've been there before.
Jordan Staal is going to be the captain for the Hurricanes moving forward. Justin Williams taking time away from the game. We were talking to Rod Brind'Amour about this yesterday, and he said, it's really tough to quantify until games are actually played what exactly will be lost with Justin Williams now sidelined. Where will Justin Williams be missed most, do you think?
I mean, that's obvious in the locker room. Even I was just kind of looking around today, just lamenting on that, I guess, just how, he would just talk to us every single day, and he just has that swagger about him that he just knows exactly what to do and what to say, and I think that's going to be most missed, and obviously his right shot on the power play, but you can't really tell until it's halfway through the season, probably.
At Sarah Sivian on Twitter, every time my friends ask me for dating advice, I'm like, dude, we're all going to die one day, maybe even tomorrow. Send the GD text.
You know what? After a few weeks of experiences, I think I retract that statement. Maybe hold off sometimes. But honestly, if you're worrying about what it's on your mind a lot, just text the person. You'll get peace of mind no matter what the answer is.
Can I follow? What's happened the last few weeks, if you don't mind me asking?
That's for my own personal podcast, which hasn't happened yet.
All right, we need to get that podcast going. Looking at this roster now that the dust has settled this offseason, is this a better team on paper than last season?
Yes, definitely. There's just so many question marks, though. It's like, was Mrazek's run last season a Cinderella story? That's kind of that's the biggest question for me, and there's so many new guys. How are they going to fit in the locker room? That's obviously, if they play as advertised, the roster is better, though.
On Twitter, at Sarah Sivian, it's cool that the bank can just decide something I bought was sketchy and put a hold on my account. Buddy, I'm a creep. We'll be here all day.
I was just trying to buy some clothes from Australia. Do they think I'm not fashionable? They're like, I was trying to, it was so embarrassing at Starbucks, just ordering a coffee, and they're like, your credit card's declined. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm sure I have money, at least $5, but it's crazy that they can just do that.
What kind of Australian clothes are you buying?
I don't know, just a cute little boutique, trying to get fashionable this season.
Right, that makes sense. I'm trying to do the same, too. See, guys, we're there as well, in these media rooms, you gotta look the part a little bit. The Carolina Hurricanes facing the Montreal Canadiens tomorrow night at PNC Arena. It's Sarah Sivian with us here from The Athletic, Carolinas. How noticeable of a difference is it in your coverage, the following ahead of tomorrow's opener versus the buzz at this time last year?
I think it's a completely different situation for me specifically, too, because I've actually been around the team for a whole season now, one whole season, and I was here for training camp this season, but I think there's an expectation, there was pressure last year, and now there's an expectation to keep what came of that pressure up. Like, they have to make the playoffs again to keep interest around here. And it's different, but I don't know. It's like, it's all, at the same time, it's the same thing.
On Twitter at Sarah Sivian, living in a college town is just attempting to go out on the weekends and just getting your feet stepped on and screaming, "I'm not judging," in the ladies' bathroom when you're actually totally judging.
Like, geez, I don't remember falling down all over the place when I was in college, but I mean, like, some of these people really got to get it together. Oh my God, I feel like I can't even enjoy myself sometimes. I have to go to, like, breweries or something now because I'm in my old age. I'm, like, worried for these people.
I don't have any more hockey questions, but I have one more tweet that I'd like to ask you about. Is that okay?
Yes.
Quote, "There's like 20 good-looking men walking around with dogs at my new apartment complex. Is this a convention, or should I have been living in North Hills all along?"
Well, I actually found out that I'm not living in North Hills. it's like, I'm not actually going to say where I live on the radio, but...
Please don't.
It's right near the arena, and it's just, I felt like everything that isn't downtown is, like, and that's north of downtown is just, like, vaguely called North Hills. I didn't realize that was a specific place, but I was told that Hurricanes PR Mike Sundheim came up to me and was like, "How's the commute from North Hills?" And I'm like, "Haha." But there's a lot of good looking guys around here. I didn't really know that. I guess I'm recently single, so I haven't been keeping an eye out. But they're not downtown. They're in wherever I live and North Hills.
Is this podcast ever going to happen?
The Athletic just launched a bunch of podcasts, and I wasn't included, so I'm feeling like a healthy scratch, but I might just need to take matters into my own hands. I want a podcast so bad.
On Twitter, at Sarah Sivian, let the Athletic Carolinas know that Sarah Sivian needs a podcast. We're behind this. Follow her Carolina Hurricanes coverage, which, again, has been going on for a while now, but the games actually start, the regular season games, tomorrow night. Looking forward to watching on television and seeing you very soon, Sarah. Thank you for doing this.
Yep, see you soon, anytime.
You got it. That's Sarah Sivian from the Athletic Carolinas. And just a really entertaining Twitter follow.
We're now the opposite of the front of sports talk because we're back to it. Get it?
Well, that's not funny.
Back to the drive.
That's moronic.
With Josh Graham.
All right, it's time for my top 10 Jokers. The new Joker movie comes out tomorrow with Joaquin Phoenix. It's going to be very difficult for anyone to top the performance of the Joker in The Dark Knight about a decade ago. But if anybody's up to that task, I'd probably say it's Joaquin Phoenix or maybe Daniel Day-Lewis. So since it's Joaquin Phoenix, one of the best thespians we have in all of Hollywood right now, I'm excited about it. I've been all aboard with this project for a very long time, and it seems like it's getting great reviews. There's been a lot of criticism as well. I'm doing everything I can to stay away from reading reviews about this movie because I want my own judgment to be... I don't want other preconceived notions to influence how I watch the movie going in. So I'm holding off on that. I don't know if I'm going to go tomorrow night or Friday night because all these threats of people potentially inflicting violence at the movie theater, these incels who are saying that they're inspired by the Joker. You have the army saying they're taking measures to protect movie theaters. I'm just going to wait till a matinee, maybe a Saturday matinee or go on a Tuesday night because mass shooters don't go to the movies on Tuesday night or to a matinee. That's a pro tip from yours truly. What, Aaron? It's true.
Is it? See that in the handbook or something or what?
That's right. I mean, if you're trying to get the most people harmed, if you're trying to inflict the most damage, you don't go to matinees. You don't go Tuesday night. So I mold my schedule that way.
It's like we missed the newsletter or something.
Yeah, I must not have renewed my subscription.
Put it up on the ESPN ticker at the bottom of the screen. Mass shooters do not go to the movies for matinees or on Tuesday night. let's get out of this awkward space and get to the top 10 list.
Please.
Oh, yeah! Woo! Top 10 jokers. My top 10 jokers. Yes, Des.
I didn't say anything.
Looked like you did.
No, I'm just uncomfortable right now. This is my uncomfortable face.
Number 10. My number 10 joker. Nikola Jokic.
Shia.
That is my number 10 joker.
Not bad.
He's a top 10 player of the NBA right now, too.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I saw the list.
Well, he is. Yeah. Jokic is a top 10 NBA player. Statistically, there's no question. Like, he's an all-NBA guy. Was he first-team all-NBA or was he second?
No, he had to be second. There's no way he made first.
I think he might have been first-team all-NBA this year, Nikola Jokic.
We'll find out. We'll find out.
He had an excellent year. He's one of the 10 best players in the league. There's no question based on the way that he's played the last two seasons for Coach Mike Malone and the Denver Nuggets. Should I keep filibustering for you or move on to number 9? Number 9! My number 9 joker, Devin Jester.
It's the Rock, it's your boy!
Are they all going to be Jay-Z?
No.
Okay.
You're so impatient.
Well, no.
We're only two in.
When we start things with two Jay-Zs, I don't know what you're doing with these sounds.
Nah, it's just the way it came
I'm in. Bothered, I'm annoyed.
Nah, we're good.
Devin Jester, when he returned that kick in Super Bowl, what would it have been? It was the Bears.
I call it the wet
the Colts.
One. It's the wet one.
The wet one.
The Prince Super Bowl.
Prince Super Bowl. Yeah. Devin Jester. What do we got on Jokic?
He was indeed the Nuggets' first All-NBA first-teamer since David Thompson.
First-team All-NBA. No question that guy's a top 10 player in the league. Number 8. My number 8 joker. David Njoku. Woo! Very good tight end. Is he the Browns' number 1 tight end? I don't know why I'm just asking you guys questions.
I think he is.
I think he got hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's why you had another tight end catching a touchdown for the Browns this past weekend in Baltimore.
Browns got a lot of talent coming back.
Great analysis there. Yeah, I mean, the Browns, yeah.
They've got Kareem Hunt coming in. I mean, they've got their entire secondary's injured. They're coming back.
That's the spot you feel like, all right, well, let me make sure I get this in here. Got the Browns. Yeah, they're pretty good. David Njoku.
You mentioned him, not me.
Number 7. My number 7 joker. Haha, Clinton Dix. We've had a lot of Haha, Clinton Dix on the top 10 list. I think he was there last week.
Yeah, wasn't he just on here last week?
No, that was
or a couple weeks ago.
Aha, Clinton Dix.
That must be his
for the one-hit wonders.
That must be his cousin or somebody.
Yeah. Number 6, my number 6 joker, Heath Ledger.
Is he the best Joker of all time? Not from this
I want to think about movie. This. Maybe we could get to this conversation in a bit. Tom writes in, as a lifelong Detective Comics collector, Jack Nicholson's Joker is the most accurate to the comic books.
I agree.
Heath Ledger, best performance, I think. So it really is whatever criteria you set that I think will lead you to the answer you want. Number 5. My number 5 Joker, Dick Trickle.
They don't belong here.
Favorite NASCAR driver of all time.
Ed Hardin making an appearance on the show.
Yeah.
Also a noted NASCAR writer. But you don't belong there.
And hater of carp.
He does hate carp, as he made known.
They don't belong here.
Number 4. My number 4 joker. Novak Djokovic.
Been a solid list.
You say?
Solid. Yeah.
Just wait till we get to the top 3.
Oh boy.
My number 3 joker, Jadeveon Clowney.
That's fancy. That's spicy right there. I like that.
Scariest person I've ever seen.
Really?
In college. Up close, just being next to Jadeveon Clowney. Terrifying.
I bet he's a teddy bear.
He probably is. I never talked to him. But he's a scary dude. Number 2. My number 2 joker. Prank Thomas.
I see Frank Thomas every day on
the Big Hurt
commercials.
Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt.
Every time he does these commercials, he always ends. You know, it's about the Nugenics stuff that he's pushing right now, like
yeah.
the extra testosterone stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of it, he always looks dead in the camera and goes, "Your girl will like it too." And then he winks and he walks away.
That means that's Frank Thomas telling you that he has a big penis. Number one, my number one wow. joker, Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle.
He is my number one joker. There you have it. My top 10 jokers.
I like it. You did good. That's a good list.
You even like the wordplay. This is the first time you actually been in on the wordplay.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I liked it.
Trying to think what else would have been on the outside looking good.
Yeah,
what missed? Nah, I just actually, these were the first 10 I came up with, and I just threw them on paper.
That's how it should be.
What do you got, Aaron?
Steve Miller of the Steve Miller Band.
We were playing Steve Miller going
in. We bumped in with
it
the Joker.
It just didn't have the words.
Right. Joker Phillips.
Who's Joker Phillips?
He's like a wide receiver coach at Maryland.
Oh, thank you.
It's you random,
Google,
but it applies.
Just Google people
thanks
named
for
Joker.
Filling us in.
Mark Hamill.
Oh, Mark Hamill.
He okay. was. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Mark Hamill's an interesting choice.
I miss that. I miss that animated series, the Batman animated series.
Fantastic.
My childhood, yeah.
Mark Hamill, though, is he your favorite Joker? Can we agree that Jared Leto's probably the worst?
Terrible.
Really yeah. bad.
I'm going to go with the person on Twitter that hit you up.
Nah.
Jack Nicholson, that's a really accurate description. Jack Nicholson's Joker is more aligned with the Joker in the comic books than any of the other ones before or after him.
I loved his Joker portrayal, and I was hardcore like Heath Ledger would never surpass this until I watched Heath Ledger. Now I'm waiting to see what Joaquin Phoenix
does. Heath is like
right.
unhinged
I'm giving him
Joker.
A chance. Can we talk about Zach Galifianakis, though, in the Lego Batman movie?
That happened? I might need to check that out.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Cesar Romero can't be on the list because he just painted over white over his mustache. Like he refused to shave his mustache, so he'll just have a painted over white mustache, which I guess made the Joker look crazier.
That disqualifies him?
Yeah, it was the Adam West Batman.
He did have an iconic mustache.
Like, I don't even think Jack Nicholson's in the top three.
What?
Eh,
dude, that role is so iconic.
I got a feeling that Joaquin Phoenix is going to do better, and then it's Heath Ledger and Mark Hamill, man.
No, you can't put Mark Hamill's Joker above Jack Nicholson. Are you insane?
I don't know,
man. Who says
man.
I can't? He
I know
was great.
It was animated, but it was
America.
Great.
America. America says you can't. That's just not right.
America actually says I can. There's this thing called the First Amendment. I can say what I want.
Ooh.
Gotcha.
Burn.
Got it. America.
Want some aloe vera for that burn?
I'm giving Joaquin Phoenix a puncher's chance. I'm
so
going in with an open mind.
Movie.
I am. We've been putting hype on this movie before everybody else did.
I know. That's how I found out about it. It was between the two of you.
I'm a Todd Phillips guy, man.
I'm worried.
About?
Why?
This movie.
Why are you worried?
Todd Phillips has never done a movie this dark before. I know him from old school and like stuff like that. Like
the Hangover?
Yes. Campy comedy. And I don't know.
He also played a role in A Star is Born, too, I think. He might have been a producer. Let me check.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he played a role in A Star is Born.
I will say the commercials for the Joker movie look very interesting.
I'm not that concerned. I mean, Adam McKay did the same exact thing and put out great movies. Put out The Big Short and Vice after doing Step Brothers, among other things.
True. That's true.
So it's not impossible to suggest he was a producer for A Star is Born. So it's Joaquin Phoenix. I trust that. I like Todd Phillips. We've seen people go this route before. Judd Apatow doing it, Adam McKay doing it, comedy, two dramatic movies. It's never the other way around. It's never someone, I'm doing these great drama movies and now here's one of the best comedies. No, it's comedy and then evolving to dramatic work. Not just for actors, but also directors and producers too.